Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I'll do the roll call.
Yep.
Excuse me, this is the operator. This call is now being recorded.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the, I guess it's July 9th, 2009 meeting of the PDP work team. And I'm going to turn it over to, this is Jeff Newman, chair of the PDP work team. I'm going to turn it over to Glenn to see who's on the call.
Thank you, Jeff. On the call we have Jeff Newman, who's the chair of this group, James Bladel, a registrar constituency, David Maher, registry constituency, Paul Diaz, registrar constituency, and Wolf Ulrich Knoben, who is ISP. And for staff, we have Marieke Koenigs, Liz Gaster, and Glenda Saint-Géry. Have I missed anybody who's perhaps on Adobe Connect? No, it doesn't seem like it. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Glenn. I think this indeed may be a short call, unfortunately. Seems like the registries and registrars and Wolf, thank you for the ISP. Seems like we're represented, but I think without business constituency reps, ISP constituency reps, and BC IP and non-commercial, or ALAC, I think we're I'm not sure how fruitful a discussion will be. Glenn, nobody's just joined in the last minute or two, right?
No, not at all.
Okay, so, well, for those that are on the call, and we'll end it shortly, unfortunately, unless people will at least end the recording, if people want to stay on, I think Marieke and I and Liz may talk just a little bit about some logistics, but for those of you that are on, the survey that everyone took, I think almost everyone in the group took at this by this point, is now posted or has been sent around to the group a few days ago, and I think it's pretty good. It gives a good indication on a number of the questions of where we stand. It also gives a good indication of some open items on the planning and initiation phase that I was hoping to cover on this call, but it seems like we'll cover that on the next one before we get into the second phase of the PDP process. I encourage everyone to actually to read the survey, to read the questions, or in the comments, and see if they have any comments to that, and to also look at the Stage 2 document that Marieke sent around a little earlier today. On the next set of topics that we'll talk about, what ICANN staff and what we're going to work on is to try to take all these survey questions along with the planning and initiation phase document. I think that was last circulated on the 18th of June, that we can use those documents to put out a paper which will be used to either make recommendations to changing the bylaws or keeping the status quo based on what people have said so far, and obviously that'll just be a skeleton. We'll have discussions on that as well. Is there any other questions?
Well, yes, Wolf speaking, Jeff.
Sure.
I was not able to participate in the Sydney meeting, and I wanted just the last updates from that Sydney meeting. How was it about? So, just to be updated. So, is
sure
something else beside the survey you offered here, or
actually we spent. So, thank you for bringing that up. There is a transcript that I'm having Glenn send around to the group of that session. Actually, it's of the first two sessions. There was an hour session that started it off with the entire. I'm sorry, what was that? Oh, okay. I thought someone was saying something.
I think we have some crosstalk. Maybe the operator can help.
Marilyn's just joined the call. Marilyn Cade.
That's the crosstalk?
No, not yet.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Morning.
For your benefit, the only people we have on the call right now are David Maher, myself, James Bladell, and Paul Diaz, both registrar reps, and Wolf ISP, yourself, and that's an ICANN staff, so we're kind of short on attendance. Wolf just asked for a brief update on what happened in Sydney, so I was just going over that. There's a transcript that Glenn is going to send around. It's been on the GNSO website, but I've asked her to send around to the group. The first hour was a full PPSC, the Policy Process Steering Committee meeting, so that, you know, there's two work teams. There's the PDP work team, which is us, and the working group work team, which is talking really about the functioning, the functionality of the working groups once a formal policy development process is initiated and it's recommended to go to that working group stage as to how they will operate. So we each gave an update as to where the teams are and just tried to just get a status. The next hour and a half was the PDP work team where we really just spent most of the time going over the survey, which I think was really helpful because it was kind of a tool that we used to address some open items and to let people know just where we stand. We had spent obviously the last several months talking about a lot of these issues, but it was good to see kind of, even if the questions weren't the best or worded questions, it was still a good indication of where we were with certain of the topics, the subtopics of the planning initiation phase. Marilyn, you know, we have very few people on this call. The agenda for this call was to go through the rest of the survey and close out the open items on planning and initiation so that staff could go back, take all of the stuff, and write up the skeleton of proposed recommendations, you know, with the general feeling of the group. Obviously, that was just a real skeleton that we could just, so we had something on paper so that we could critique or add to, comment on, etc. I'm not sure if we have enough people here to do that or whether we want to push it off till the next call. And Marilyn, I'm not sure, I don't know if you're by your computer, if you can get on to the Adobe.
Yes, I will try to do that.
I mean, what does the group think as far as... it's kind of a mix here, so I just want to hear what people think. You know, we kind of have half of a quorum, I guess.
Jeff, this is Jim.
Yep.
Just a thought that perhaps we could continue with your plan of reviewing the survey responses for folks that weren't in Sydney, and then that'll be, excuse me, two opportunities to go through those. And when we reach the point of actually making any kind of decisions on any open items, that's where we would defer due to lack of quorum. It's just a thought.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I think what we were going to do actually is we didn't actually get all the way through the survey. We got through half of it. So we're going to do the second half during this. I think that's a good idea. Now that Marilyn's joined, we have a BC rep, we have an ISP rep, we have registrar, registry. I think it might be...
Yeah, Jeff, you don't have a BC rep. I'm participating in my individual capacity, but I am a member of the business constituency.
Good point. Thank you, Marilyn. I forgot about that. But I do think, you know, the recording will be available. It's not like this is going to be the only bite of the apple. Obviously, we're just using the survey and the previous document to kind of come up with the next version. So why don't we do that? Why don't we join from where we left off on the in Sydney, and for those of you that are on Adobe Connect, it's up there now. It's page, and for those of you who just have access to email, we're on page
13.
Yes, page 13. Thank you. I'm not sure why my computer is not picking that up, but okay. So what we'll do is, I know Jim is in a car, so we'll kind of summarize the question, basically. And Marika, just to review, how many people now have done the survey?
Let me just go back up. 14.
14.
I'll just pull it up in Adobe Connect so you can see who have responded to date.
Okay, so I noticed Marilyn's name's not on here. If you'd like to respond to the survey still, Marilyn, do we close it up or is it people?
It's still open.
Marilyn, if you'd like to add your thoughts in there as well, at some point over the next day or so.
Sure, I'll do that. I had been confused. I thought it was closed, so I just kind of lost track of it, but I will do that.
Okay. I think, so I see Paul's done it, David's done it, Jim, if you'd like, you've done it, you were, I think, the second one, and Wolf, you've done it. So great, so everyone else is on this call has done it. So if we can go back then to question, I'll let you scroll to it. Okay, so this question that was asked basically said, should, where available, positions of stakeholders be included in the issues report or some other product of the planning initiation phase? And I think two-thirds of the respondents said yes. And then the remaining four people were split between no or no strong view either way. It basically says that opposition should be the comments. A couple comments were submitted. Opposition should be factored into any decision to proceed with policy work. Scraping together the bare minimum support to initiate PDP suggests that the issue may not be the most effective focus of the community's limited time and resources. And a second comment was yes, but in a concise manner with neutral reporting. And so maybe some links to other positions, but the goal is not to have some cumbersome document. So is there any questions? I don't know if anyone who submitted a comment is on this call or if anyone had a comment on this. Okay, do you want to just jump to the next one is talking, the next couple questions I think talk about our birds of a feather concept. And Marika, do you have control of the document? Do I? I don't think I have control. Okay, should birds of a feather, one more up. No, is this right? Okay. Should a birds of a feather type meeting be part of the planning and initiation phase? And there were four options here, or three options here. It's either yes, but it should be optional. Yes, it should be. The second one is yes, it should be a requirement. Strong no, or no view either way. And I think overwhelming majority, three-quarters of the people answered and said yes, as long as it's optional. And another one said yes, it should be a requirement. So I think two people said no strong view. No one opposed it. So I think like a lot of the recommendations that have been discussed, I think this is kind of fits into the category of a best practice or something that for those that aren't familiar with the policy development process, and I mean that with the lowercase letters as opposed to the definition of PDP, for those that aren't necessarily familiar with it or want to get an issue raised, it certainly is helpful to them. Is a good best practice, and I think in the end would probably produce a better quality issues report. So the comments that we got basically say that the first comment is, in virtually all the cases I'm aware of, the request for IRs preceded, for an issues report is preceded with a variety of previous actions, workshops, reports. There's no need to add a new mandatory step.
Can I just raise a question? I read that, and I did think it was interesting that people said, kind of, oh, well, we're doing it. But the fact of the matter is, as Glenn knows, and as you will recall, and others who've been around a while, the fact we're doing it now is new. And I'm not exactly sure that, you know, I think we need to ask ourselves, shouldn't there be some rigor or some predictability? So, you know, if we're doing it now, that's good, but do we actually have a structure? There's a big difference between an hour-long presentation by staff or a or outside experts or just a panel of different slices of opinions, but not necessarily knowledge-based briefings. All of those things could be called a workshop.
Correct. And I think, I know that several members of the working group that strongly oppose the mandatory requirement are not on this call. But does anybody that is on this call have any thoughts to what Marilyn said? Or let me ask the question a different way. Recognizing the need to be flexible, recognizing that a formal, even the IETF birds of a feather is not a requirement, but is a best practice, is there something we could do to put in structurally that would be required that would help achieve some of the, or at least that would, as Marilyn said, put some structure in it so that even though we know it's done today, that in the future we can ensure that there's something in place to more fully flush out an issue.
I feel compelled to make another point before we go on. The other point I would make is if there's a workshop and it's scheduled at a time when no one can attend, we've checked the box but not achieved advancing knowledge, information sharing, or wisdom.
Yeah, there's certainly issues of that in Sydney where there were workshops that were conflicting.
Yeah. So, you know, how would people feel about proposing it, and maybe that's already there, proposing a best practice and a sort of a, you know, an objective statement, right? So the objective of such a workshop should be, you know, my view is we've got to go beyond opinions. And opinion-based policymaking is, that's not a good place to start. You have to go through that stage, but it's not a good place to start.
So can you maybe help us out, give an example of, and you could take something previously that was done, obviously, and say what that objective statement would look like.
So, you know, maybe we could take malicious conduct as an example, since it's unlikely. We've had two workshops on malicious conduct. The objective statement, I think, or the purpose statement would be to examine the, to identify the areas that are being referred to as malicious conduct and to present fact-based information about the actual experiences and the circumstances and the various parties who are impacted.
Okay, so it's a general statement as opposed to a predicted outcome, like to develop a policy to deal with malicious conduct. Your objective statement is much more, objective, and is much more without presupposing an outcome.
Yeah. I think so, because, you know, part of the conversation, you know, and work on an issue by a working group may or may not result in a PDP, and a PDP may or may not result in consensus policy. A PDP could close without any action, but it may have done a fair amount of examination of an issue and maybe even referred work off to other parts of ICANN, the operational staff, the contract enforcement staff, the CCTLD, the CCNSO, SAC. You know, the workshop purpose, I think, the purpose of having this kind of information baseline development is to develop an understanding of the topic and the issues, not to presuppose what the outcome will be. The stage I'm envisioning, By the way, I would think there could be multiple workshops in the life of a working group. And at a later stage, there could be a different purpose for a working group. But this is a workshop. But this would be the very early, I think, use of a workshop.
So the question is then, and I know, I guess, I don't want to speak for, you know, Alan and Mike Rodebach, who are pretty strong on this subject, is when it gets down to bylaws, do you require either a workshop drafting team or other pre-PDP activity?
Are we going to set the timeline for the PDP in the bylaws?
Well, I think there'll be certainly think it's
guidelines, right?
I think it's expected that we set guidelines.
Right. So I would say in the bylaws that we ought to have some kind of source documents that are referred to in the policy development process that offer guidance. Let's say, heaven forbid, all present counselors decide for one reason or another to retire instantaneously. There's no residual DNA memory of what to do and how to do it. So you've got to have some stuff documented.
So when you're writing the bylaws, you basically allocate some time for a pre-PDP activity, giving the council options that they could refer to in source documents, which would include things like a workshop, drafting team,
white paper, right, you know, a range of examples.
And so you set some time for them to do that.
More than 14 days.
With the outcome being providing enough information for staff to then write the issues report.
Providing input to the staff. The workshop would not be the totality of the research that staff might feel they need to do to augment it, right? Because a workshop could be superficial. Experts might not show up. The staff may need to do further research. They may need to do research internally on topics that weren't covered in the workshop. But it would be one input. But it also is an input to the community.
Marika, I have a question. Would this workshop precede the issues request? So would that be as well a way for the council to be able to decide whether, you know, to feel the issue is ready for an issues request, or that the council says, yeah, well, more work needs to be done before we actually go to the issues request because we're not clear what the issue actually is? Or
So that's a good question, Marika. You know, one thing that strikes me is I think we're trying to outline a flexible framework of tools, resources, and activities, right? So I wouldn't want it to be, would this workshop, right? It would be more workshops, issue papers, staff briefings, expert briefings are all resources that can be utilized throughout the pre-PDP process and in the PDP process. Isn't that kind of a better way to think about it? So let's say, had no idea you needed a, my favorite one, had no idea you needed an economic analysis. Having come to that realization, you now pause and, you know, get an economic analysis. Had no idea you needed an outside legal review or a technical review on something that didn't appear to be have a technical implication when you started the PDP process. Pause, get the outside technical update. So I'm thinking about it more as a set of activities that can be used, activated at the appropriate time in the process. Not that it's do a workshop once and that's click. Did you see what I mean? Okay, that's done. We did a workshop. I'm thinking of it more in the way that inside a corporation like the one I worked at for many years at AT&T or inside associations where I spend a lot of time still, when do we do at the ITU in the process that they invoke, at the OECD, what kinds of tools and activities are available?
So trying to fit it into the framework, there is a point at which the council needs to vote, A, to even have an issues report drafted. I'm just trying to figure out where these tools fit in, or can it fit either before the council votes to even initiate the issues report, or is it after the council votes and says, you know, there's been an issue that's been requested of us to take a further look at. So what we're going to do is we're going to vote to have an issues report drafted, but going into that process, we want the tools that are recommended, or we want people interested in this issue to take advantage of the recommended tools in helping to craft that issues report. Then we can decide whether a working group needs to be created.
Don't think of it. The only thing I would say, and then I'm going to go on mute for a couple of minutes to finish something that I need to do. Let's not be absolute. Let's say you could do it. But remember that to do a meaningful workshop, unless you're going to do it by webinar, that you can only do a meaningful workshop at an ICANN face-to-face meeting unless you do a webinar. And we haven't really had a lot of good luck with attendance and participation in webinars.
But I think what I was trying to do, though, is
I'm with you. I'm just putting out a note of caution about, you know, if we say that the workshop has to be done before, if we say it has to be done before, then we are tying the hands of the council and the working group about how much flexibility they have. Jeff, I'll be back on in a couple of minutes.
Okay. All right, why don't we, Marika, do you have any questions as to what we just discussed and maybe adding that to the...
No?
Okay.
No, I think it adds to some of the other points I've been made before. I need adding that flexibility and having different kinds as well, like the birds of the feather type meeting to help inform the discussion and as well help staff to get information. An option could be, for example, to have, you know, at the request phase, have the council review at the same time to see what next steps they see is necessary, asking the requester for their input and maybe ask staff as well what they would need, and that the council can then, for example, direct, saying, well, we think it would be appropriate to consider either a workshop or birds of a feather or public consultation or whatever. But maybe that you provide then a list of options that can be considered, and maybe at the, you know, the council is then the one who guides or directs based on the input received on, you know, what should be the necessary steps of, of the initiation phase.
Right. I mean, you could word it as something that says that if the council votes to initiate an issues report, council should recommend utilizing one or more of the following tools that are available to it, and then list out the options or something like that.
Yeah, and I would personally as well recommend something that it should recommend it on the basis of the consultation with either the person who has requested the issues report and or staff, so they have some feedback as to what, you know, those parties have to work on the issue or have requested the issues think might be required in order to get, you know, well-founded and with proper information issues report.
Okay. Let's jump then to the next question.
You should be able to scroll now, Jeff. Are you?
All right, let's see.
I've changed your settings, so.
There we go.
Giving you control.
I thought we had covered this in other questions, or we may have just covered this topic ad nauseum. Let me see. Yeah, I don't know if we need to go through this question, because I think we've talked about this. I know we talked about it in Sydney, and I know we talked about it ad nauseum in a number of calls. So for those of you that just want to read that as far as what could be the outcome of a PDP, I think we've talked about the number of different outcomes. I certainly saw that in the transcript. So let me just go to, I think these are good questions on the role of ICANN staff. I think there's some controversy here. Says that, so on paper, the role of the ICANN's General Counsel is limited to providing input for the staff recommendation, which is part of the issues report. Should other consultations be foreseen? And the answer is that it's pretty split here. Some say yes, but the majority of, some say yes, but the majority of either said no or no strong view. Let's look at the comments here. It says, I think it, the reference to general counsel should be replaced by ICANN staff. General counsel recommendation that is an issue is largely out of scope, should not be easily dismissed by counselors with an agenda and or ill-defined desire to do something about an issue. Question is hard to answer as formulated. Discussion in the working team have shown that the expression staff recommendation is ambiguous and should be distinguished from possible intervention from staff and general counsel directly to the president and CEO. Someone said if it's useful, then why not? And then general opinion on how the issue is covered and or affected by existing policy contracts and agreements. So, role of general counsel has been discussed at a couple of our different meetings, and at this point, it's really the general counsel supposed to weigh in on what's in scope and what's out of scope. The what's interesting is that Marilyn was on this the PDP team initially. I was on it as well. It was my understanding when we initially crafted the PDP that what was in scope was really meant to look at in scope in the contracts, but what it's evolved into is what is in scope with respect to the GNSO in general. So however we come out on that issue, we certainly need to clarify if we still want the general counsel to make a recommendation or staff to make a recommendation as to whether it's in scope. We need to define what the scope is. In our paper. So are there people with thoughts on that as to whether the staff should still have a role in the issues report or elsewhere if they think that's appropriate to issue a recommendation as to whether it's in scope or out of scope? And I will leave that open to if people have comments. Does that mean in scope of the GNSO or in scope of the registry agreements or both? Any registry or registrar want to make a comment on that?
Jeff, it's Paul. sorry, I was one of the people who voted no strong view either way, so I'm not going to be much help on this one.
Okay, well, let me ask a different way. As a registrar, I guess you said you had no strong opinion either way. Is there anyone else that's got a comment? I don't know if I heard David.
Would you ask the question again? I'm sorry.
Sure. So the question is, right now there's a requirement that in the issues report, general counsel is supposed to make a recommendation as to whether something is in scope or out of scope, recognizing that the way it's been interpreted is it in scope within the GNSO scope as opposed to within the registry or registrar agreement scope. And do you have thoughts as to, A, whether there should still be a recommendation by the general counsel or ICANN staff as to whether it's in scope, A, within the GNSO, and B, within the contracts, if that's important, or is this something that we really don't need anymore?
Well, my view is that the general counsel should do his or her job, and the question of in scope or out of scope in both aspects is essential. I think we're entitled to that. We might disagree with what the general counsel says, but it certainly, in my view, is something that the kind of assistance we expect from staff.
Okay, so to flush it out a little bit, it's been said by ICANN staff, and I know Dan Halloran has said this, and I know staff has said this in general, is it's hard for them that requiring an opinion as to whether something's in scope or out of scope requires them to presuppose an outcome, and therefore, because they don't want to presuppose any outcome, it's hard for them to make a recommendation whether something's in scope or out of scope. Do you have any thoughts on that, or maybe make it easier?
Well, I mean, in one sense, that's always the case. We hope that these processes are reasonably focused so that the outcome is not so totally broad that it's impossible to give an idea. My experience with PDTs is that generally there is some focus. There's not a whole universe of possibilities. And, granted, it may be difficult to give a legal opinion on scope, but it still seems to me it's possible and it should be done. I don't really understand the staff objection to that. A carefully drawn legal opinion should say, it can outline the parameters of what it covers.
Okay, well, I see a few people have their hands raised, so let me go to Marika.
Yeah, no, just to add as well to what David already said, I think maybe part of our efforts as well to have a better definition process at the issues request stage might help the general counsel as well. But the point I wanted to make was on the scope question, because something to take into account would be if this group would feel strongly that the scope only relates to the contract, then this group would also need to consider an alternative process or mechanism to address issues that do not relate to contracts but that do fall within GNSO scope and ICANN's mission. So that's something to take into consideration if we discuss that further down the road.
Okay, I see Paul and then Jim.
Yeah, I was going to wanted to add and echo to what David said and really focus on the second point that was raised here. I appreciate what David's saying that, let general counsel do its job. There's an expectation. And although I don't have very strong views either way, I do agree with whoever wrote that, a general counsel recommendation, if something is out of scope, that, they're not going to make such a determination lightly. For the reasons that have just been discussed, it's a complicated issue and whatnot, but if they come back and say something's out of scope, I think that should be taken pretty seriously, and I agree with whoever said that, counselors should not quickly dismiss that because they perhaps have an agenda, they want to see a particular thing pushed through, and they just will brush it aside. If general counsel comes back and the determination was something was out of scope, I think that's pretty significant, and therefore, really do see a value in staff and counsel continuing to play the role that's traditionally played in offering that input at the beginning.
So let me ask a clarifying question then. When you say general counsel should still determine whether it's in or out of scope, you're talking about the scope of the GNSO or scope of the registrar agreement?
Yeah, and then I think Marika just raised a very good point that the questions that are being put before the council to consider, that question formulation is very important because, it could be argued, and I'm trying to think of real-world examples here. I mean, we can all probably come up with some where it's in one camp or the other, narrowly within contract issues or more broadly defined, something that's within the remit of ICANN or GNSO overall. Perhaps that's the challenge for all of this, Jeff, that it's sort of going to depend, and that's why we have this work team right now, because there have been valid cases for both, It can't narrowly be pigeonholed into just contract issues inside the picket fence, in other words. And therefore, I think a more expansive view is probably still appropriate.
Let me, and I'll go to Jim on the next one, too. Let me go to the other complicated wrinkle is that the previous committee had decided, and the boards approved this, that there is a different threshold as to whether you could proceed to a working group if the general counsel determines something's in scope or out of scope. Obviously, it's a higher threshold if staff determines that it's out of scope. And so I want to ask, when we see that requirement, how do we view that? Does that mean in or out of scope of the GNSO? Because we have to define that. All we have before us is if the staff determines it's out of scope, it's a higher threshold. So I want to ask what we should say that out of scope means.
This is David. My view is that the counsel for ICANN is and must be aware of the picket fence, the registry contract. And if something is clearly out of scope because it violates the terms of the picket fence contracts, counsel can certainly point that out. They don't necessarily have to reach a conclusion, but they can say that this presents a legal problem, which at some point is going to have to be addressed. So
is it your view, and then I really want to get to Jim, is it your view, though, that so that should be pointed out, but the higher threshold should only apply to whether it's out of the scope of the GNSO as a whole? Because in other words, a policy could result as a best practice. I mean, in my thinking, a policy could result in a best practice. So therefore, the higher threshold probably should only be required if it's out of scope of the GNSO as a whole.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, Jim, do you have thoughts on that or other thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. And my comment's probably a little bit behind the train of the conversation, but I wanted to echo what when David and Marika submitted earlier, that the role of general counsel would be to, very carefully and should not be taken lightly when they declare that something is out of scope. But I also wanted to add that aside from scoping, that perhaps the general counsel could offer warnings when, as we accumulate consensus policy and we continue to modify them on the fly, I think that general counsel's role could be to indicate when, without presupposing an outcome, but indicate when a potential policy or PDP is touching upon existing policy. I think it's going to be more and more difficult as we go forward for people to just intuitively know when that's happening. And I think that, having someone weigh in on that and point out where that might be the case might also be helpful. So that's all I wanted to add to what Paul and David and Marika had said earlier.
I think that's good. Can you just help me flush that last part out? So you said the general counsel should point out where something impacts an existing policy?
If it's possible to do that without presupposing an outcome, I think that's true. If you could say that, here, based on this issues report, here are the current policies that govern this issue or could be impacted by any policy recommendations or changes from a PDP, and then eventually also point out if there's any policies that are currently under review with other PDPs that the issues report or the participants in the workshop may not be aware of. As ICANN continues to grow with its docket of PDPs, I think that's going to be harder and harder to just know or just have a gut feel on. I think that, someone needs to kind of be the referee on that. So I don't know if that lends itself well to the question. But
I think it does, and I think an example may be, you're on this group too, so for example, the registration abuse group, drafting team, that touches on who is, for example. And so it would be helpful for the group. You know, we all knew it because a lot of us have been in the Who Is debates have gone on forever. But something from staff that says, you know, look, if registration abuse touches Who Is, you should be aware that there's these other PDPs that have gone on in the past and other ones that are continuing now to go on. Just be aware of those and just to point that out, I guess.
Right, and it's less of a declaration of scope and more of an establishment of boundaries. You know, an indication that this is where you need to reach out to other work that's going on in other areas.
I think that's a good point. Anyone else have comments on that? Now, if anyone have thoughts on that? As to, maybe it's not the GC, but it's certainly ICANN staff that could, in the issues report, or should point out where something impacts existing policy or there's other work going on that may be helpful, instructive, or otherwise to the group that may be formed to talk about this issue?
Yeah, that seems helpful to me. I'm certainly grateful for advice from staff on something that might have been missed.
Now, other question, do we need to, right now it's limited that the general counsel should provide the advice as to whether something's in or out of scope. Should we basically leave that, just say, should we keep it at general counsel or should we just make it more general and just say ICANN staff?
No, I think the question of scope is a legal counsel's job. Your previous question, I thought, was directed to staff letting us know that, oh, by the way, the CCNSO is, conducting some procedure which would impact what you're doing. Just general background, but I think scope requires the legal analysis.
Yeah, I definitely agree with David on that one. Jeff, it's Paul.
Yep.
And, you know, the reality is so often staff is working with counsel and vice versa, but on an issue of scope, I think it needs to come from general counsel. It needs to be identified as such.
Okay. Or at least general counsel's office.
Yes, office. Agreed.
Okay. And Marika, Liz, any thoughts on that? Anything you want to add or no opinion on this call?
No strong views. I mean, I do see, I don't know, maybe that can be done in the wording where you say that, you know, of course, the general counsel will need to review the scope question, you know, down the road maybe, because, you know, as you said, or Dan has indicated, that it's not always easy to define the scope if an issue is not very well defined. And I think that's, you know, something that happened, for example, with Fast Flux, where I think the opinion of the general counsel is like, well, it depends a bit which direction you go. If you really look at this part, you know, it might be in scope. But if, you know, the PDP goes down this road, it might not be in scope. So, but as long as, of course, they indicate that and, you know, have the flexibility to put it in those words, I think, you know, I think it's, it shouldn't be a problem to leave that in. The general counsel provides an opinion on the scope of the issue.
Okay, so I think that leads well into the next issue too, which is, okay, so general counsel issued an opinion. What about a second opinion? What if you don't agree with the general counsel? Should there be someone to go to? And then obviously the next question is who? But should there be someone to go to if you disagree? And I think two-thirds of the people said yes, and a third said no strong view either way. So, a bunch of comments. Obviously, the comment number 5, which is from whom, is a very key question. And so, does anyone have any thoughts as to, okay, so let's say we do have a second opinion or, I think comment 1 is good too, that there have been some number of suggestions that GNSO should have access to counsel other than ICANN counsel.
Speaking as a lawyer, And I may be a traitor to my class or my cause, but there comes a point where this is turning into hopeless bureaucracy. If we're going to lawyer these things to death, I mean, all we're doing is ensuring that every PDP will last 30 years. I'm exaggerating.
No, I think that's a good comment as to, you know, bureaucracy and adding time. So is anybody that said yes on this call that there should be a second opinion have a thought as to who it should be? You know, my own thoughts that I'm trying to is just the ICANN General Counsel has a fiduciary duty to the corporation to act in its in and I'm not sure it seems to imply that we would turn this into an advocacy session. I mean, it's really only the general counsel of ICANN that could determine whether something's in scope of an ICANN activity. I'm not sure if
well, he doesn't determine. He gives an opinion. There are going to be cases where there's a lack of consensus and strong disagreement. And we've seen this already in one or two instances. And when worst comes to worst, somebody may have to go to a court that has jurisdiction wherever and say, look, there's an attempt here to do something that we believe is illegal, and a court should step in and order ICANN to stop it or whatever the relief is required. I mean, you have to recognize that and all we're asking from ICANN counsel is a objective legal view and opinion as to the legal consequences of what's being proposed. That isn't a final determination. It's not as if this is a local court making a final decision. We're still trying to build consensus.
So the other thing I'll note for the record, too, is that even an opinion of general counsel doesn't stop. It just creates a higher threshold, but it doesn't stop the policy process from going.
That's my understanding.
Anyone else with thoughts on this? So I think this is a good question for put out on the mailing list, Marika, because I think the people who are really strong on this issue are not on this call, or at least were strong that there should be a second opinion. So I'd like to hear their thoughts as to why and from whom, what they're thinking. Just kind of throw that out there.
Okay.
If we jump on to the next question, I think we kind of talked about this. Should the role of ICANN staff in the planning and initiation phase be clarified? I think majority said yes, a couple said no, and a quarter of the people said no strong view either way. And then the follow-up was, whoops, why did I just go that far? Oh, here. If yes, what should the role of ICANN be? And I think, I'm not sure if we need to talk through all this. I think in our different stages we've kind of talked about this. Marika or Liz, do you think that we need to add anything as to what, I mean, I think in every stage that we've talked about some roles of ICANN staff. Or do you think this is broader than that? There's one of the comments that says, if yes, should make clear if there's a difference of opinion among staffers. Currently, issues reports are drafted by one person. It's not clear how internal editing review processes work. If certain staffers have a strong view, it should be spelled out. Understanding any such differences of opinion could help counselors anticipate potential controversy hurdles that would accompany a PDP.
If I could maybe just point out that that's not the way, at least since I've been at ICANN, how we develop issues reports. It's not one person writing it and then just putting it out. It's normally sent round to everyone and anyone that, you know, might have a view or might have dealings with the specific issues for feedback and input, and especially as well with the legal counsel's office, of course, or the general counsel's office. So, you know, and at least for all the issues reports I've written, I haven't seen a case yet where it's just because one person has a very strong opinion, suddenly the way the issues report is written. I think it's not a correct statement.
Okay. Anyone else with thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I think that staff should speak with one voice.
I agree.
It would just complicate everything to have some staffers feel one way and some staffers feel the other way. Even if that's true, I think staff needs to come out with paper, a recommendation, or whatever it is, with one voice.
And I think that's how it currently works. Like, I mean, we discuss this, we have conference calls, we review the documents, and we come out in the end with something that everyone, you know, feels they can support. At least that has been my experience so far, and I absolutely agree. I think, you know, staff should speak with one voice, and even if they have discussions internally, that's something completely different. But, you know, the end product should be supported as a staff document.
Anybody disagree with that? I mean, there's some other comments that said it's critical that policy staff be seen as providing assistance, but that they have no role in advocacy or decision-making and should refrain from at all times from lobbying and from trying to influence the direction of policymaking.
So, Jeff, it's Marilyn. Sorry. Can I speak on that issue?
Please.
And I realize this is being transcribed, but I think my experience as a counselor is that there was a period of time when that was a problem. However, my observation, I'm not a counselor, but I pay pretty close attention to what is going on. My observation is that we have highly professional staff who are highly qualified, and that we want to create an environment for them where they are a neutral but informed and expert group. And I think we want to be really careful about not saying that staff cannot give advice. So I'm going to use an example of, you know, our tying our own hands by setting a stricture in which staff is not allowed to express an expert view as long as it's done in a neutral way and it is done to support and educate. I think we do not want to create this barrier which says you can't tell us that we've overlooked something, you know, because there are people in the community who are not yet fully comfortable with the idea of having expert staff. They are still adjusting to, you know, we're kind of growing up and maturing as an organization, and we've gone through the days of having no staff and being our own staff to now having expert, highly qualified staff. I'm just very cautious about the tone that came across to me in that comment. It sounded to me like people were saying, we can't ignore expert opinions, research, information, advice if it comes from staff, and just stick to an uninformed opinion if we want to. And I don't think that's what anybody means to convey.
Jeff?
Sure.
I got my cue.
Yep.
Marilyn, I don't know when you, how long you've been back in our hall, but I think I don't disagree with what you say. I was the one who took the position that we certainly encourage staff to give the benefit of their counsel and their expert advice and their breadth of knowledge of what else is going on in the ICANN processes. I would never want staff to feel that they couldn't bring up topics that they thought were appropriate for consideration. But and there's a very fine line. It may be difficult to draw, but there is a line between lobbying or taking a position and urging a position as opposed to making useful information available. Does that help in resolving this?
I think she's been disconnected. I just see on the meeting view that she's listed as disconnected.
Oops. Maybe she was insulted by your answer, Davis. I'm kidding.
Well, right, well, nothing personal.
I'm sure she'll join back on. Let me jump ahead because I want to make sure we get to most of these. We have about 15, 20 minutes left. Next question was on community input. Should there be a requirement to obtain public input at the stage of the request?
Jeff, I'm sorry. I disconnected myself. I just wanted to apologize and say I was back.
That's okay. Thanks for coming back. We've moved on to the next area, which is community input. Should there be a requirement to obtain public input at this stage? And I will note that a majority said no. I think it's – well, let me read the comments here. It should be optional. One comment, requests are almost always driven by public input. This is one of the functions of optional birds of a feather. And then someone else said, not a requirement, but if there are stakeholders identified in the issues report, they should be allowed to submit comments or positions.
Birds of feather are not a substitute for public comment, right? Birds of feather typically means like-minded people get together. Or people who, you know, so I didn't think that was a substitute for public comment. But did the last suggestion provide the option? Like, let's say that the recommendation is that public comment should be taken at this stage, can that be provided for as an option?
Now I'm trying to figure out, Marika, maybe you can help out with the question. I think, and I don't know if people would disagree, but once an issues report is actually drafted, that we're not talking about public comment after that. We're talking about public comment before the issues report is drafted?
Yes, I think that's correct, because it's at the stage of the request. So it would basically be, I mean, I think in this case, at least from a staff's perspective, I think, you know, it would more be the optional way. If there's really an issue that, you know, we would say, well, we really have no information and we would, you know, like to at least put out some specific questions that we need input on to write the issues report, then that, I guess, might be a way to do it. But I think the question indeed was in mind with at the issues request. So the issues request has been adopted, and then the question is, okay, do we either need to do a public comment just to ask, you know, the public in general what they think about the request, or I think more from a staff's perspective it would be more like, are there any specific questions we need to put out just because we're lacking the information, or, you know, we just need to see if there's any public information out there that people will want to contribute.
So can I make a distinction between staff is looking for particular information as opposed to public comment? Because I think those are two things, right? One would be a staff might publish a list of questions and invite people with expertise and anyone else to comment on those questions, right? It would be further data gathering. The second would be we're seeking public comment on the issues report. And I'm sorry, I've lost track. Do we do public comment on the issues report now?
Yes.
That's what I thought. So we're planning on changing the status quo?
No, that was my question. I think this is before the issues report is even drafted, should there be a public comment period?
But there's no public comment period on the issues report. There's only initial report. There is, after the initiation of a PDP, there is a prescribed public comment period, but I don't think there's one on the actual issues report.
Well, we've been doing that in the GNSO has put out issues reports for
comment. At least not the last two or three I've written. There haven't been any public comments periods for the issues reports. They've only been done for the initial reports of working groups.
So maybe we could ask a question of the staff in their role, just a question from those of you who have written issues reports. Do you envision the need for flexibility to allow for public comment?
I think I've made that point before. I mean, I would see the need for a public comment here, but only maybe to correct, like, you know, make factual corrections or, you know, provide information that has been lacking. Because I'm not sure whether the issues report should already, you know, have a public comment period where actually people start debating the merits of the issue and, you know, what the potential outcomes should be. That might already, you know, go ahead of the actual discussion on a possible initiation and the work of a working group. So, because what we've experienced as staff or what we do miss is that, you know, indeed we write this issues report and it goes out there, but, you know, we have a limited time to do it. And there's no way formally to actually update it or, you know, add other information as we, you know, people say, oh, well, you put that in there, but it's actually no longer correct or this has changed or whatever. So, you know, that might be that public comment period where you say, like, here's the issues report. Let us know if there are any, you know, factual mistakes or any information that you really think is lacking to really inform the debate. But this is not the place to, you know, start debating the issue.
Right. Well, so just to add, I mean, you could say, did we get all the issues, right? You draft an issues report. You may have missed a bunch of issues. So, I mean, I think that's a good question, Marika, probably for the mailing list, too, is currently there's nothing in the bylaws, once an issues report is drafted, to have a public consultation or public comment period, should there be one? And again, you could narrow that down, saying, should there be one for the purpose of ensuring that the issues report has covered all of the issues. Again, it's not a solutions meeting, but it's a issues meeting. I'm sorry, an issues report. I'm mixing up two concepts because it was going through my mind. We have project management, obviously. In our company, when we do proposals, we have meetings that are just issues meetings that we're not allowed to do, quote, solutioning. If we start solutioning, we basically get kicked out of the meeting. It's really strict. It's kind of like that concept where you basically should only take comments that are comments on the issues and not on solutions or the merits. So, Marika, can we maybe throw that out as a question?
Yep.
I actually think it's got a lot of merit. I don't want to it just makes the council's job, I think, easier. It may add a little bit of time, but I think it would make their job easier.
Yeah, you know, I really like that, Jeff, because let me just give an example. Let's say if we would just remember wild cards, for instance. Let's say hypothetically that staff would have written a issues report at that time, and it would have happened before the SBAC got heavily involved. Putting that out would have been an opportunity for, you know, technical people in the internet to say, no, you missed this issue.
So, you know, if they, for example, had missed the issue of, well, how does a wildcard affect email? You know, someone needs to...
Exactly.
...to put that in there. Rick, let's throw that out there as a question, and just with those kind of caveats, saying there's nothing in the bylaws currently that requires this comment period. A number of people have suggested this on the last call. Here are the reasons that were suggested. What are your thoughts?
Okay.
Because again, I think from people not on this call, you'll hear that they're afraid it'll delay things too much. That there's no need. That'll all come. You know. But I think they need to voice in on this. I think we talked about the number two, the next question, so I'm going to skip that in the interest of time. I think we've talked about three. If there is a public consultation, then I think constituencies would be allowed to also report. How to incorporate. Okay, so let's say we do have a public comment period. So we're saying at the initiation phase that it's an option available, I think is what I've heard, that it's an option available to the person who's requesting the issues report. It's one of those, it's possible for workshops or white papers or other things. If they choose to go down that path, council may want it to go down that path and make that recommendation. But now we're talking about a community input after the issues report is drafted, but before the council votes on it.
Jeff, I have another question on the previous question, and I think it links as well to this one on, you know, constituencies providing input.
Okay.
Is there a feeling as well that this should be, you know, once an issues request has been adopted by the council, should an automatic request for input go to constituencies, or this should just be a voluntary, like, well, you should know that this issues report is now being developed? You know, if you want to, you can provide information, or how would you envision, how do people envision that?
And right now there is no requirement that it goes to constituencies?
Not at the request stage or the issues report stage. I mean, I think probably the person who puts forward the request for an issues report will consult with some constituencies, you know, to prepare for a vote, but I don't know, you know, how much discussion goes into the formulation of that, or, you know, at the stage of the issues report, that there is currently no formal request for input from constituencies. And it's something we discussed as well a bit in Sydney, that the staff has taken the approach not to go out and ask certain constituencies for information, as this might be seen as, you know, being biased or only talking to one, not to the other. So we've been very cautious about that.
I think that's another thing to add to kind of the question that we asked before. Certainly at the stage of when an issues report is drafted, I think I'm getting the feeling from people on this call that a public consultation period is a good idea, although we're putting that question out to the fullest. Maybe another rationale is to get ideas from constituencies that may not have been involved in the initial request. Any other thoughts on that one? And then the question is, what if there is this public comment period, or with the constituencies or the public or both, how is that incorporated in? So I guess, does that mean that staff then needs some more time after the public weighs in to finalize the issues report? I think the answer would be yes if we do have a public comment period. I don't think it would be useful to have a public comment period and not have input be considered.
I mean, from a staff's perspective, I think how we would see it, if indeed you have different options, you have maybe birds of a feather, a workshop, or like a public comment period, or constituency providing input, I think that's all information that should go into the issues report to really have, you know, a very broad overview of, you know, the different views and opinions that have already been expressed and the issues that have been discussed. And, you know, for staff to make an attempt as well to analyze to see if there's, you know, what has been set to date, and you know, incorporate that all in that one document that then will be used for the council to decide whether to initiate a PDP or not.
Any comments or thoughts on that? Okay, I think next one, the role of workshops, information gathering, I think you can all read that, but I think we talked pretty much about that stuff. Timelines, which is a big topic that I think people could just read this. I think we're going to need to be flexible. I think what I've heard from previous discussions are things like there should be guidelines, there should be ranges as opposed to exact dates, and possibly if those guidelines need to be exceeded, some reporting mechanism to council as to why more time may be needed.
Jeff, I would be happy to share a document that I developed recently that basically gives a bit of an overview of the recent PDPs and the time it has taken the different phases. I mean, for the issues report, I think it's less relevant because we've always tried to at least do 15 days or 30 days, you know, to get things done. But it does give an idea for the other phases, what the reality of, you know, policy development currently is.
I think that's good. I think you should resend that around. I think part of that may be, you know, maybe a redistribution of time. Maybe there's too much time spent in the working groups because a lot of the pre-work hasn't been done.
Yes, before. I think that's a good point.
So I think from that standpoint, it's good to send around and maybe say, you know, look, or I don't know if this is an easy thing to predict, obviously, but maybe talk to some of the chairs of those groups and say, hey, look, you know, this took a long time. Is that because, is it your opinion that some of this time within the task force or working group could have been shortened if more work was done up front, or what do you think are the reasons?
I think if you look at the list, you can clearly see the difference in the timelines. For example, if you look at a fast flux that, you know, went into all kinds of directions and struggled with all kinds of things, of course, that one has a very long timeline. But if you look, for example, I think at IRTP Part A, which had very focused questions, you know, a group that was meeting on a weekly schedule and I think worked very diligently, I think that's a very realistic timeline for a PDP that's very focused and looks at narrowly defined questions.
Right.
So I think we can assess, looking at the issues that were discussed, and I think especially those that have been involved in those different PDPs, which ones could be a model for well-defined issues.
Okay. Good. I think you should send that around. I think that may be helpful.
Okay.
Let's see. We're reading question two now. It says, would a flexible timetable be an option, i.e. in the request of the submitting party with staff support develops a draft timeline which can consist of a number of phases that are predetermined with a set time frame, and then the comments are only if time allotted is no more than 45 days. Otherwise, advocates may try to forum shop to get a pet project accepted when that issue couldn't pass muster on its own. I'm not sure I fully understand that. I like comment three. That's one way to go. All right, well, we could read that. Let's see. We talked about additional research. I think we talked about that one. All right, economic, this is Marilyn. You're still on the call? Is Marilyn still on?
I haven't looked.
I am.
Hi. This is your part. Question is, should a preliminary economic analysis be conducted such as to evaluate market demands, impact the community, ICANN staff costs, and other resources needed from ICANN as part of the planning and initiation phase?
So I have two comments. First of all, an economic analysis is not an economic analysis about the cost to ICANN of doing its day job, which includes policy development. So I was really amused that was included. You know, I'll just say that I'll say more about this at another stage. Policy development is a major output of ICANN. It is a core service. Should ICANN think it can go into cost recovery on policy development, I think it will find itself quickly totally illegitimate in the eyes of many people. So, I think it's appropriate to identify staff resources that are needed and to scope the cost of, you know, research, et cetera. But I want to set that aside from an economic analysis related to the issue.
Okay, so let's strike that part. So without the ICANN staff or resources, the general question of should a preliminary economic analysis be conducted with regard to the issue?
And my point would be when when should an economic analysis be part of the research that is needed, right? Because it may be that, and I'm just going to use wildcarding again as an example. I don't know that you would have needed to do an economic analysis of the impact of wildcarding. That wouldn't necessarily make sense. But
right.
if you are doing a change in an existing policy, so I'll go back to PDP06. I personally probably would have at the time thought, I don't want to start an argument over this, but because it's in the history, I would have thought that understanding the implications of allowing registries to introduce certain kinds of services versus registrars probably did have an economic impact on both of those sub-elements of the provider categories. But we didn't analyze, we did not include an economic assessment, an economic overview, an economic analysis, or an economic position paper. Those are all things that in my life and times I have purchased. They're very different. They take different amount of resources and knowledge. I would say striving for flexibility and the right tools to be used in building whatever the house is we're building. In some cases you need a saw, and in other cases you need a brush hog, right? So
this could be done at it doesn't have to be done at the research stage. It could be done at the working group, at the request.
Oh, yeah. And probably is actually better later, but it needs to be done before the policy is formulated.
Okay. All right, any other comments on that?
And can I just say, but I'm clear, aren't I, that you don't need it in all cases.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So I need to, and I know a number of people have to drop off, and maybe some have already dropped off. I think this is a good place to end it. I want to thank those of you that are on the call. And I think we're almost done with the survey, but I think this is great for pointing out some of the issues that we had some gaps in. The next call is in 2 weeks. We're going to finish this up, figure out when we can get a draft of this stuff out with recommendations, and then start on stage two.
Yeah. Jeff, is that correct that we're next in 2 weeks? Because I think last time we decided to go back to weekly calls as we weren't getting enough done. But is it weekly or biweekly?
It's biweekly. I don't think we decided for every week. That would be too much.
Okay, so biweekly, so in 2 weeks' time. Okay.
Okay, so that will be on the, sorry, it's Glenn, it's 23rd. Okay.
Yes, and in between, Marika, we can send out those questions. I think that will certainly help get some input on from some other people that I know felt strongly on those issues.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye now.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.